Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
All right, hope you had a great weekend. It was an enjoyable week last week on the air, but a different kind of week. We had interviews pretty much every day throughout the week, but there's a lot going on in the news and some very scary things happening and some challenging things. I could go down a lot of roads today, but I really only just want to go down two. And these are things that are going on. One is the so-called Equality Act, which got passed last week. It's anything but an Equality Act. It's really a sledgehammer, a slingshot, a bazooka, an atom bomb, and everything else you could think of for the transgender LGBTQ world. Really, really scary. Passed the House, okay? Most likely, it will not get any traction in the Senate. And unfortunately, I don't really know what Trump would do. I guess it depends on who he's listening to. He does have a soft side of him on this particular issue, on the LGBTQ and the transgender thing. But in other cases, he'll go with the conservatives. But it's a little unpredictable there. So this is kind of scary. So I want to talk about that. And then, of course, we have all these different pro-life legislation, these bills, which we're all excited about, right? We've talked about it a lot on the air. And just this year, Georgia, Alabama, Ohio, Kentucky, Mississippi, Tennessee, Missouri, the Louisiana governor, who is a Democrat, but he's a pro-life Democrat. He's breaking with the Democrat Party and indicates he'll sign their heartbeat legislation. His name is John Bel Edwards, Louisiana governor, who's a Democrat, signaled that he would sign his state's heartbeat legislation, effectively banning abortions after just weeks of pregnancy. He said, when I ran for governor, I said I was pro-life, and so that's something that's consistent. So he's, you know, it's awaiting a vote from the Louisiana House of Representatives and would make the state one of the strictest on abortion access following a slew of other states that passed restrictions. I'm reading from a Fox News story. An apparent attempt to make the Supreme Court reconsider major precedent on the issue, which is why I'm starting with this, because we're going to talk about it. There's two different things going on here, okay, that we need to be very aware of. We're excited about these pro-life legislations, and Alabama being the most restrictive in the country, with the hopes that it'll go to the Supreme Court and Roe versus Wade would be overturned. Massive touchdown, a grand slam party like it's 1999, right? So, but that's assuming the Supreme Court, number one, would even take it up. And number two, that they would vote to overturn Roe versus Wade, which would be one of the biggest landmark decisions in this country's history. Okay, just like Roe versus Wade was a big decision, overturning it perhaps would be an even bigger decision, which would then send it back to the states. Short of a constitutional amendment, it's going to become a states' rights issue. Okay, so but there's two different things going on there. Mostly what we've seen legislatively over the last 30 years is called incrementalism. And we've seen abortion restrictions get more broad, more sweeping, started with the partial birth abortion ban in the 90s and then, you know, 20 week bans and things like that, heartbeat bills, all that kind of stuff. Okay. So that's a question there. So that's there's that. And then there's what's going on right now, which is kind of going for broke, passing all these laws. Specifically, Alabama even talked about this. Legislators in Alabama even talking about this, saying we are passing this specifically to go after Roe versus Wade. OK, that's what they're saying. And so that's going for the big enchilada, right? That's swinging for the fences. That's Babe Ruth pointing the bat out to the right outfield saying, I'm going to knock this right out of the park. Okay. Then there's incrementalism and there's danger there. So it's not as clean cut. And unfortunately, the only reason we're having this conversation, the only reason there is a concern is because the judicial branch has become the legislative branch. The legislative branch with respect to Trump right now is looking like the judicial branch. And the judicial system in general, constitutionally, is way more powerful than it was ever designed to be. And so the whole thing's kind of flipped on its head. And so this is a serious concern of what we're doing as we try to fight for the life of the unborn, but not just the life of the unborn. Of course, all the damage that's done to post-abortive women, particularly, but men and the coarsening of our culture in general. Okay. So this is, I'm going to use two articles to do this. One is by David French. He's writing for the National Review. He's swing for the fences, okay? And then an answer to that by a gentleman named Ramesh Panuru, who Ben Shapiro's friends with him. Ben Shapiro's friends with both these guys, and Ben likes them both, but these guys are in different camps on this because Ramesh wrote an article in Bloomberg that says pro-lifers have momentum, but they need to move gradually. Banning all abortions is the ultimate goal, but demanding too much too soon would cause a backlash. Speaking of that, did you hear Pat Robertson recently said that he thinks Alabama's going too far? And Pat Robertson's, you know, been saying pro-life stuff for decades, but he thinks Alabama's going too far. Too far, too fast. That if we don't leave restrictions in there for abortion based on rape, incest, and the life of the mother, that we're simply asking for too much. That's more of an incrementalist mindset versus a swing for the fences. Abortion is wrong all the time, simply because of the personhood of the child that resides inside of its mother's womb for 9 months or so, and that's where the danger is, and it's a difficult subject because obviously. Most likely you, and definitely me, want abortion outlawed, period. By the way, on the case of rape, you might want to go back and get the show, either watch the Facebook Live broadcast from Friday, which with Rebecca Kiesling, who is the product of rape. She talks about my people group, which is great. She talks about not wanting her people group to suffer for the sake of other people's convenience or not having to go through a tough 8 or 9 months as a quote-unquote incubator for a rapist. She is the product of rape. So Rebecca was on this show Friday. I would strongly encourage you, especially most people struggle with that conversation. Abortion in the case of rape or incest, okay? You need to go listen to Rebecca. She handles it beautifully. She's been on the pro-life stage nationally and internationally for years now, and she is the product of rape. So please go listen to that show. You can watch it on the Facebook page, which is just the Steve Noble Show on Facebook. Just watch the Facebook Live from last Friday, or you can catch the podcast at thestevenobleshow.com, okay? So make sure you check that out. All right, so I'm going to go down these two roads with as much time as we can today, and I can revisit this. This isn't all going to end today, okay? So we have time, but I'm trying to get us all educated so we know what's happening here, or we don't just get caught up in our glee, which we should have, over these pro-life measures. But it's a dangerous road. We're going to talk about that and then the Equality Act. Okay. Let's start with David French's article. This is in the National Review, and I'm just going to get it started here. And he's for swinging for the fences, okay? We are witnessing the beginning of an anti-abortion legislative revolution in red America. Two generations of pro-life activism, persuasion, and argument have yielded pro-life supermajorities in state houses across much of the South and Midwest, and they recognize the fact that we have reached a moment of legal possibility we may never attain again. Perhaps not for generations. It is possible, maybe not likely, but possible, that the Supreme Court could overrule Roe versus Wade, and these legislatures have chosen to go for broke. He says, David French at the National Review says, good. Ramesh Panuru, also a conservative, also very pro-life, writing for Bloomberg, says, not so fast, it's a dangerous game, and it is. We'll try to get through all this when we come back. This is Steve Noble, hang in there. So what are we waiting for? Show, appreciate your time. Trying to work through really two different angles on the whole abortion issue that we're dealing with. And we're celebrating, are we not? As we look at what's been going on around the country, because all kinds of states are making big moves here, right? We've got Georgia, Alabama, Ohio, Kentucky, Mississippi, Tennessee, Missouri, even the Louisiana governor, who's a Democrat, but a quote-unquote pro-life Democrat. I don't know how they live with themselves, but staying in that party. But he's going to sign their heartbeat legislation. There's all kinds of movement all over the place. You've got Alabama, which is the biggest one, most restrictive, and written specifically to go to Roe versus Wade, which we're like, yeah, overturn Roe versus Wade, about time, thank you, Lord Jesus. But that might not work. So I'm reading from a David French article in the National Review, and then we're going to read a other side of the issue. These are both very conservative people, David French and Ramesh Panuru. Ramesh writing for Bloomberg, and he also writes for National Review, and David French's article in National Review, because it's a gamble. Because when you run these things up the flagpole, they're going to go to a federal appeals court. Most of our federal appeals courts are still liberal and probably going to try to work to protect Roe. And so they would overturn the state law, and then the state attorney general would have to appeal that to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court does not have to take the case. If they punt, then the lower court's rule stands, the appellate court, and then boom, it's gone. Okay, so unfortunately, this whole thing has nothing to do with you, the will of the people. You're irrelevant, other than who you choose to higher, so to speak, to put into your state legislatures, which is why you see in these particular states all this really aggressive move towards abolishing just about all abortion in their states, okay? Because they have that kind of supermajority in most cases. So they have to, quote-unquote, strike while the iron is hot. So David French agrees with that. He says, good, while Alabama Governor Kay Ivey ponders whether to sign Alabama's bill, oh, he said he's going to, it's worth considering why this represents an important moment in the battle for life in the United States. Both Alabama's abortion ban and Georgia's heartbeat law contain a key provision. They declare the personhood of the unborn child. That's the key, okay, the personhood. This is a vital measure that is aimed directly at a key portion of Roe versus Wade's opinion. Late last week, David French had a lengthy phone conversation with State Representative Ed Setzler, sponsor of Georgia's legislation. He said his bill wasn't waving its fist at Roe, it's answering Roe. Specifically, he pointed at a provision in Part 9 of Justice Blackmun's opinion, this is Roe versus Wade, where Blackmun states that if the personhood of the baby is established, then the pro-abortion case collapses. Why? Because if it's a person, it has constitutional rights. Okay? Now we're into the 10th Amendment, to a certain extent, 14th Amendment mostly, okay? Now we're into that. The late Supreme Court Justice was, of course, discussing the definition of personhood under the federal Constitution. Setzler, however, notes that the Supreme Court doctrine has long allowed states to expand constitutional liberties. They can establish standards of religious freedom, free speech, or due process, for example, that go beyond the First and Fifth Amendments. They cannot be more restrictive than the federal Constitution, however. In the abortion context, this doctrine traditionally has been interpreted to allow states like New York to protect abortion rights beyond the minimal threshold required by Roe and Planned Parenthood versus Casey. Georgia, and potentially Alabama, would be asking the court to permit them to expand the constitutional liberty of the unborn child and to recognize the distinct human identity of the baby in the womb. In other words, Georgia and Alabama are saying, we've read Roe, and we're making the very legal statement that Justice Blackmun says would fundamentally undermine the case for abortion by defining it as a person, okay, a human person. That changes the whole game, according to some of the writings in Roe versus Wade, okay? He goes on to say this, the timing is right. For two generations, the Roe decision has distorted American politics. Millions of voters cast their ballots for presidential primary to influence the president's judicial picks, for obvious reasons. Donald Trump would still be the Apprentice host, but for his pro-life pledges. And that's debatable. Have 20 years of political activism been in vain? Have federal elections polarized to the point of mutual partisan hatred, David French writes, merely to decide whether doctors must have admitting privileges at a local hospital before they can kill a child? It's worth knowing where the justices stand, and either way, a decisive ruling has the potential to de-escalate national politics for a generation. If the court overturns Roe, rightfully holding that the federal constitution is silent on abortion, then the battle turns to the states. In many respects, local politics would rise in importance relative to national politics, and Americans would be able to express their fundamental values through the ballot box. So just so you know, okay, if this were to go and they were to overturn Roe, it would go back to the states. And some states, like New York, would maintain legal abortion, and in the case of New York, right up to the point of delivery, okay? Just like the gay marriage situation used to be. You had 31 states that codified traditional marriage in their state constitutions, and the rest of them said, it's fine here. You'll have the same exact thing with Roe versus Wade getting turned back to the states. You'd have states that Texas would most likely be zero abortion. Mississippi, Alabama, all these states that have passed heartbeat bills would most likely outlaw abortion. But other states, Hawaii, California, New York, Massachusetts, Colorado, really liberal states, Pennsylvania most likely, it would be totally legal. And it would be unrestricted. So you're getting a slightly different lay of the land, but in many states it would be gone, okay? But there's a downside to all of this, which is if that doesn't work in the court. Now you set another precedent. You set another precedent that protects Roe instead of overturning it. David French finishes his article with this. And by the way, I'm going to punt today on talking about the very, very dangerous law that they voted on and passed in the House. Next, it goes to the Senate. That's the so-called Equality Act, which is anything but. It's very, very dangerous. It's directed right at religious liberty and would be a decimating force there, like an atom bomb. I'm going to pick that up tomorrow. Okay, so I'll talk about the Equality Act on the show tomorrow. I'm trying to get a hold of my I'm talking to one of his press people. Mike Johnson, Congressman Mike Johnson from Louisiana, is a good friend of mine. One of the few people on the Hill I trust and the number one authority on religious liberty in the House of Representatives. Okay, guy's unbelievable. So we're working on getting him on the show. David French finishes his article with this, back to the abortion thing. Finally, moral declarations have their own value, and through a combination of heartbeat bills and trigger bills in recent months, the elected representatives of voters in Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee, Georgia, Mississippi, and now Alabama have decisively rejected the vast majority of abortions performed in their states. They have cast their lot on the side of life. They have decisively and dramatically illustrated how Roe has inflicted a serious injury on American federalism and American democracy. Remember, every time you hear American federalism, that's just states' rights. Okay? That's all that means. Federalism, in the original founding fathers' minds and in the way they wrote the Constitution, preserved a lot of independence and power for states and reserved, held back the power of the federal government. Expansive independent states, restrictive federal government. Okay, that's federalism. Obviously, we've flipped that on its head. A judicially invented right, this is David French finishing his article, is damaging the very fabric and premise of our constitutional republic. It's time for another fundamental challenge to the right to kill a child. Georgia has thrown down the gauntlet. Alabama may follow suit. They did. Their laws represent the next righteous and prudent step in the fight for life. So swing for the fences, okay? That's one. That's what's going on with these states. But is it prudent? Will it work? And this is where you have this argument between what is morally correct and then in what is strategically intelligent, okay? Because that doesn't always go together. And especially in this case, because we're dealing with a massively skewed, powerful judiciary. And whatever happens in the court system, those precedents have power for years and decades, okay? So it gets very dangerous. So when I come back, we're going to flip to the other side, which is called incrementalism. So this is going to be an article I'm going to use from Bloomberg, written by Ramesh Panuru, who is very conservative and very pro-life. He says pro-lifers have momentum, but they need to move gradually. Banning all abortions is the ultimate goal, but demanding too much too soon would cause a backlash. We'll consider that side of the argument when we come back after this. Love isn't always a time. It's not always on time, but usually it is here. This is Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Good to be with you today talking about what's going on. And I think we're doing end zone dances, right? Touchdown dances as we see these various states passing these really, really restrictive. Hold on a sec. Really, really restrictive abortion bills. Okay. And we should be celebrating. That's a big deal. Okay. But it's certainly the right thing to do morally. There's no question about that whatsoever. Morally, ethically, biblically, it's the right thing to do. Ban all abortions, period. Without exception. And if you struggle with that one, which I know a lot of you do, a lot of people do, without the exceptions, rape, incest, life of the mother, at least please go listen to the show from this past Friday with Rebecca Kiesling, who's been speaking out on this issue for a few decades. And she is the result, the product of a rape. So that's who you need to go listen to. You want to talk about perspective. When they say, well, the left yells, and especially women on the left will yell and say, you know, a man has nothing to do with my decisions about my body, except that's not your body. That's a genetically distinct human being from the point of conception. Yes, at its smallest level, but a genetically distinct human being. It's not your body. It resides in your body. See, this is like basic, you know, sixth grade, fourth grade anatomy, right? But that doesn't matter. They're science deniers, ultimately, which is kind of funny, since they call us science deniers if you're not big on the man-made global warming. Tomorrow on the show, by the way, I'm going to pick up and we'll talk. We'll spend a lot of time talking about the Equality Act, which the House passed last week, which is unbelievably dangerous. Hope to the Lord, and we should all be praying that the Senate doesn't go anywhere with it. I think Trump would probably veto it, but I'm not 100% sure of that. Okay? So that's very dangerous. What's in that act will shock you. If you don't know anything about it, you're going to be shocked. Okay? I would say that the Equality Act is to religious liberty what Roe versus Wade is to preborn human life. Okay? It's a big deal. So I'll get to that tomorrow. But I'm going back because we're looking at Georgia, Alabama, Ohio, Kentucky, Mississippi, Tennessee, and Missouri passing very restrictive abortion laws. And praise the Lord for that. But strategically, is that going to work or is it going to backfire? If you try to get all the way up to the Supreme Court, which most of these states are trying to do to get rid of Roe versus Wade, and it doesn't go your way, you actually add another brick to the pile separating this country from an abortion-free world, okay? Or at least in the country. And we're never going to have an abortion-free world until Jesus comes back. But here's this other side, written by Ramesh Panuru. writing for Bloomberg. He also writes for National Review. Very, just so you know, very conservative, very pro-life. Okay, but he's looking at it strategically different than David French did, who says swing for the fences, right? Ramesh, not so much. For roughly 25 years, this is from his article on April 5th, the movement against abortion has been predominantly incrementalist. Its focus has been on restricting abortion in relatively modest ways rather than on amending the Constitution to prohibit it altogether. In the 1990s, pro-lifers began to campaign to ban a method of abortion they called partial birth abortion. More recently, they have sought to ban abortions after 20 weeks. The theory behind this strategy is that changes to the law would reduce abortion rates, and debate over these changes would turn public opinion against abortion. Small victories today would enable bigger ones tomorrow. That day has come in the eyes of some pro-lifers. Writing for National Review Online, for example, David French argues, that's what I was just reading, that incrementalism undermines both the political and the legal goals of the movement. French wants more states to pass heartbeat bills that prohibit almost all abortions after a fetal heartbeat is detected, and fight for those bills all the way to the Supreme Court. Nearly everyone, now this is this writer, Ramesh Panuru, who again is conservative and pro-life, does not agree with that path, okay? Nearly everyone who is active in the movement agrees with French that its ultimate goal should be that, as the pro-life slogan has it, every child is welcomed in life and protected in law, which requires that Roe v. Wade and its successors be overturned completely. People who agree on that goal are divided, however, on how to get there. French is underestimating the practical advantages of gradual step-by-step progress, which is called incrementalism, which, again, some people are going to decry, compromise, compromiser. That's like saying Jesus is a way to heaven, but perhaps not the only, right? We would have a major, I would hope you would have a major problem with that. You should, because that's a lie. It is true, back to Ramesh, as he suggests, that the Supreme Court can allow limited measures such as the 20-week bans without dismantling its abortion jurisprudence. If it took up a heartbeat law, it would have to choose either to keep or scrap its precedents. A major pro-life objective would be in sight. But since heartbeat laws are flatly inconsistent with the precedents, meaning prior cases, the justices might not have to take them up in the first place. Lower courts could strike them down and the justices could merely decline to hear the appeals. Let's say, though, that a case reached the high court. French's argument presupposes that some justices are on the fence. If so, wouldn't they be less likely to uphold a more far-reaching abortion restriction than to uphold a limited one? And that's the risk you run. Do you really think that Chief Justice John Roberts would vote to overturn Roe versus Wade, something that's been in place since 1973? I don't. I don't think he would. Kavanaugh? Gorsuch? I think Gorsuch would. Certainly the other conservative members of the court would. Alito would. Justice Thomas would. And Gorsuch would, I think. But, you know, John Roberts is iffy. Kavanaugh, to me, is even iffy. So what do you have? What do you do there? Okay. So back to Panesh's article. The upholding of a limited restriction would put future pro-life litigators in a stronger position to win more legal ground. The turning back of a more frontal challenge would put them in a worse one, because you're building precedents. Every time you have a precedent, a prior case that supports Roe versus Wade overall, you're building a higher wall around it. Okay. Does that make sense? So we're looking at, polling does not suggest that pro-lifers' incrementalist approach has led to entrenched support for abortion in our culture. The movement's turn towards incrementalism coincided with a substantial increase in the percentage of Americans who identified with it. In 1995, Gallup found that 56% of Americans consider themselves pro-choice and only 33% consider themselves pro-life. Its latest finding was a much more even 49-45 plurality for the pro-choice side. There is some evidence that the recent attention to third trimester abortion and to infants who survive abortions has shifted opinion towards the pro-life side as well. One oddity of French's case against gradualism is that he doesn't follow it to its logical conclusions, which is that the heartbeat bills don't go far enough. Their sponsors almost certainly want to prohibit abortion from conception onward, even before a heartbeat is present. They have chosen to make the presence of a heartbeat the dividing line, one assumes, on the theory that it makes for more politically attractive legislation. They have embraced incrementalism. They're just going for a bit very big increment. But their ability to reach the right political judgment is hampered by their incorrect sense that it is morally wrong to make one of the first to make one in the first place. Pro-lifers should feel a righteous impatience, but should not let it have the last word. What he's saying in this article by Ramesh Panuru in Bloomberg versus David French's article is that yes, of course. We want abortion gone. No exceptions. Rape, incest, life of the mother. Life of the mother towards the end, just deliver the baby. those arguments are weak. Incest, same thing as rape. Brutal, terrible, horrific, criminal, disgusting, evil. Absolutely. But then to take the life of an innocent person in order to avoid discomfort, the struggles, the nightmare proportion of dealing with the fact that, yes, you're an incubator for a rapist baby, but that's also your baby. Okay? Again, go listen to the show from Friday with Rebecca Kiesling, who is a product of rape herself, okay? And it was pre-Roe versus Wade, and they looked into a couple ways trying to get a back alley abortion and didn't because it was illegal. Her mom chose to have her. Eventually, her mom became pro-choice, and it's a great story. But you got to listen to her way of handling the exception, okay? The danger is, again, if you go for the fences, and again, the Supreme Court doesn't even have to take it up. So the federal appellate court, in which most cases around the country are liberal, they're going to overturn the state law, and then it remains what it was. The Supreme Court does not have to hear the case. And that's dangerous because it just sets up a precedent. They didn't hear it. Why didn't they hear it? Well, then they make their case. They explain why they didn't hear it. And then that's just one more brick that you have to get over in order to get to the point where you could overturn Roe versus Wade. And I don't think they have the votes right now, sadly. And is it going to get better or worse? Well, if Trump wins a second term, to be quite frank, I don't think Ruth Bader Ginsburg will survive another 5.5 years. I just don't. She's had a lot of health issues. She will refuse to die, but that's ultimately not her call, right? If she does, and Trump's elected again, he'll get another vote in there. Now you could afford to lose Justice Roberts, which I think you will. I don't think you're going to get him. I don't think he's going to vote to overturn Wade. It's a huge shift. It's a monumental shift. Again, I think it would be one of the biggest court cases, one of the biggest decisions in U.S. history. Dred Scott level, Roe versus Wade level, to overturn it. And so, yeah, I'm conflicted on this myself because I think strategically and I think biblically, and those don't always go hand in hand. Biblically, there's no question. Abortion's always wrong. It's never right to take the life of an innocent person for your convenience, for your economy, for some stated belief that you're trying to save them from having to live an impoverished life. It's not your place to determine the value of human life. It's already been determined. It has inestimable worth. God makes it clear. The U.S. Declaration of Independence and even our Constitution, I think, makes it clear. But this is a dangerous game, which is why we need to be praying for this. Praying for wisdom for pro-life leaders and legislators and God's favor. Even though this country doesn't deserve it. It's difficult. God help us. Come on back, Lord Jesus. This is Steve Noble. When we come back, a Money Monday update with David. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you as always. And like I said, I'm punting on the conversation about the so-called Equality Act, which was passed in the House the other day with 8 Republicans who I hope all lose their jobs. Probably one of the most dangerous, if not the most dangerous, anti-religious freedom, specifically towards Christianity, but unbelievable that they passed it in the House. It's going to go to the Senate, where hopefully it will go nowhere, but these days you just never know. So that's out there. I'm going to talk about that a bunch tomorrow. I'd hope to get to it today, but dealing with what's going on around the states with the abortion issue and Roe versus Wade. These are massive issues. And so I don't want to rush through them. So we'll get to the Equality Act tomorrow. Quick reminder about our friends at Transworld Radio, working on a 200,000-watt transmitter to beam the gospel into northern Nigeria, that whole horn of Africa, which there's a whole lot of radical Islamic fundamentalism there. And they need the gospel. That's the ultimate answer to all this. If we had more gospel in the United States, for example, then we would see the whole abortion issue change, right? Along with most of our other societal ills, if we're going to practice a biblical worldview. And love the Lord our God and love our neighbor as ourselves, things would be much better. So that's the ultimate answer, even in places like Northern Nigeria and Northwest Africa. So I hope you'll consider partnering with Transworld Radio. 200,000-watt transmitter, and they just need help paying for it. Just get right down to the bottom line. AfricaNeedsJesus.org is that website. AfricaNeedsJesus.org. We're partnering with them all throughout the month of May to help do our part to get that thing built. Because, again, the gospel is more important than everything else. And I know one person that would totally agree with that is my good friend David Fisher from Landmark Capital, LandmarkGold.com. David, how are you?
I'm doing great, and I absolutely agree with that.
Yep, I knew you would, because David's on the show because he knows what he's talking about, but also because he loves the Lord, and it's been a great partnership, and always bring great wisdom and insight, David, for the economic issues that we're dealing with in the world markets and here in America, and dealing with precious metals, which can be very confusing for a lot of people. But David's been a part of the show for about 3 years now, so we just praise the Lord for that. And when we do our little Money Monday updates with David, the first Monday of the month typically is going to be a full show that we talk about all these important issues, and then we do little updates in the Mondays after that in the last segment, which is what we're doing today. So, David, as always, thanks for being here, and I know I love this. We always dive into the scripture a little bit before we talk about these important economic issues, but I think we're going into 2 Corinthians today, so let's start with that.
Yeah, chapter 4, verse 17. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. You know, life will have challenges. You know, the world says, take all the challenges away from me and I'll give you peace. But Jesus said, I'm going to give you peace through the challenges. Mm-hmm. You know, with the world, and there's this fight between our spirit and our flesh. You know, we think in our mind when we go through a challenge, Steve, well, this is gonna kill me. It's gonna, you know, what will kill us won't. What is gonna instead, it should conform us.
Yeah.
Because challenges I found in my life, and I just came through a big one, and challenges, the times I've had them, have brought me closer to the Lord than living on the mountaintop.
Yeah,
and right. You know, I even last week I made a mistake. I said something that was inaccurate, and I need to apologize to your listeners. Sorry for doing that. It wasn't intentional, but I said last week that the national debt hit a record high of the interest on it, $591 billion this fiscal year. That was a correct statement, but what I said next was incorrect. I said, to put into perspective, that this was bigger than the total budget of 2015. It should have been, this is bigger than the total budget deficit
right.
of 2015. So, again, I apologize, but, you know, that was a momentary trouble that I,
yeah,
when you text
right.
me, Steve, after that, I just like wanted to sink, because nothing in my spirit or in my, there's not a cell in my body that wants to not mislead or quote something inaccurate, and we have to be, you know, diligent, and I apologize for not saying that word deficit, that's the key part there, but, you know, that was a moment of trouble for me, and, you know, that said, I got to tell the truth. I was telling the truth to the best of my knowledge. But the key thing is that if we do something is wrong, we got to make the wrong right.
Sure, yeah. And in that case, I mean, it was just a little slip of the tongue. You're talking about all kinds of economic numbers and balances and,
yep.
and deficits and debts and all that. It's, you know, it's pretty easy to make a mistake like that. But it's important that we pay attention to it. Iron sharpens iron. And I was like, just and realizing that it was just a slip of the tongue. So I appreciate you clearing that up, which is important. And yeah, and praise the Lord that all of this are momentary troubles. They don't feel like it at the time, but that's why we have to have our hope and our faith and our trust in the Lord, because ultimately in the grand scheme of things, they are. And so we have that eternal glory that outweighs all of that. This stuff won't even, as the difficult days that you've had with your health and everything, David, won't even be a blip on the radar screen once we come into glory. It'll just be nothing. But in the meantime, it's serious, obviously, which is why we pray for one another and care for one another. But such a great word to go to 2 Corinthians. We appreciate that. Okay, what's going on in the markets? It's been pretty interesting lately. I mean, up through about April 29th, and then we've seen some significant down days. But what's going on right now?
Yeah, so the big sector is the chip and the tech sector. They're down 15% this month. Micron, Intel, NVIDIA, et cetera. Some of these tech companies and chip companies are 35 to 40% off their 52-week high. And this is all coming around China. What does this have to do with China? Well, there's a company called Huawei. Huawei is the Chinese telecom giant, and they've been growing in market share. They represent 13% of the global tech, so that's a big chunk. And on Friday, following tariffs that were put into place, President Trump made a decision to blacklist Huawei by banning U.S. companies from working with the Chinese tech giant. We're talking about chip makers like Qualcomm, Intel, Broadcom. They all have reportedly stopped supplying parts to Huawei, and this has been a significant blow for Huawei. And also Google came out and they revoked the license for the company's Android operating system for any business related things that requires transfers, hardware, wow, software, and technical services, anything that they're doing. And this is all in compliance with Trump's executive order. So this has been a big challenge, and it's broken down trade between China and the United States, and it's affected the markets indirectly.
So where are we at in those negotiations with China? I know Trump's always painting a rosy scenario that eventually and shortly it'll get worked out, but where do you think we're at with that? And what's the worst case scenario in what China's doing to retaliate?
Well, I said a year ago when they first started, this is going to be a long process, and here we are on the anniversary almost of a year of trade. We're slightly past it. So in the small way of saying it, it's literally pandemonium. And no pun intended, but China is wanting to pull the two Chinese pandas from the San Diego Zoo and have them delivered back to Beijing immediately. That, to some people, is a very bothersome thing, but the biggest bothersome thing is China might pull the, what I call the nuclear option, and that is massively liquidate their $1.13 trillion in treasuries. They've totally backed away from the table. There's an article that came out in the...
Yeah, how much do they hold in treasuries? What's the total value of what they hold?
$1.13 trillion, and they've suggested that they might liquidate them. This would be a financial devastation. An article that I read said interest rates would soar and substantially damage the American economy.
Which is the only way, by the way, I think Donald Trump would lose next year in the election, is that the economy tanks. So we're playing with some pretty big cards here.
This is a big card. This is the wild card. This is about the only way that China could ever get the attention of us maybe negotiating and not asking for what we're asking for, because we've been asking all along for the technology transfers to be lifted, and they came really close to agreeing to that, but China didn't want to lose face, and this is the bread and butter of China, and they don't want to agree. In fact, they don't even want to come to the negotiation table anymore. There's an article that came out saying they're... In China, they call it a closed system. That's how they're looking at it. The word for relationship interpreted from American culture means we're going to get close. But in China, they see it as a closed relationship. So they're not wanting to come to the table anymore. This could trigger a bail-in, literally, because if this came where they did liquidate treasuries, where would we get $1.1 trillion to pay for it?
Exactly. Which, by the way, is a little bit more than a quarter of our annual budget right now. Our annual budget's a little over $4 trillion.
You're exactly right. So even if they started liquidating 25%, because I don't know if they do it all at once, it would cause financial turmoil for them too, but we would have the bigger turmoil because we don't have the money to pay for that. So we would either have to do a bail-in or we would have to default. And the United States has never defaulted. We've never done a bail-in, but we would be forced to do one or both of those things. So this is a big thing. Has nothing to do with how strong our economy is. This is why I got to transfer some money into physical gold to alleviate in case this happened, which it could happen as early as next week.
Yeah, to balance out the portfolio. And I know you've got a great white paper on that so people can get educated. What's that called and how do people get a hold of it?
It's called The Coming Bail-In. They can go to landmarkgold.com, or they can call us the old-fashioned way at 844-879-8255. 844-879-8882
or landmarkgold.com. Thank you so much for that reminder, David. Thanks for being with us today. And God bless you, brother. As always, we look forward to talking to you next week.
God bless you, my brother.
Okay, pal. Have a great week. We'll talk to you later. Okay, we'll be back tomorrow to talk about the so-called Equality Act. This is one of the biggest frontal assault on religious liberty. 8 Republicans in the House voted for it. What's going to happen in the Senate? We'll talk about that tomorrow. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you then.